Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to email us at ForgottenFailuresCast@gmail.com or visit ForgottenFailuresCast.com.
They're preparing a big wedding dinner. I can choose. Be the guest of honor or the dinner.
The good friar is very eager to perform the ceremony. So, do we marry you or marinate you?
Hey everybody, this is Mike.
This is also Mike.
This is also Lindsay.
And this is also Daryl.
And this is also Mike again. And this is Forgotten Failures.
Yeah.
Who wants to give the spiel this week?
I will do it now. It is the great episode 20 of Forgotten Failures, a
you
podcast.
Did it.
Woo! Yes, a podcast where we watch an obscure movie and try to determine whether it deserves to be obscure. This week's movie has never been released on DVD. It's called Wizards of the Lost Kingdom. We decided to combine two of our earlier movies, Wizards and Warrior of the Lost World, and we came up with this.
Yeah, it actually seems like the spiritual successor of both movies.
It really does.
Well, kind of.
It even opened up on this like long like background story.
It had a long backstory
that
didn't really go anywhere.
Well, it opened up with the opening credits was basically just narration. And it was like highlights from the entire movie.
Yes,
the opening credits like a trailer for.
No, it was just like Wizards. It wasn't highlights. Like,
it wasn't highlights of the movie. It was explaining how the kingdom that we're entering into came to be.
It was a prologue trailer for a prequel that didn't exist.
Yes.
It was a prologue that looked like a trailer.
Yeah, and it very much felt and looked like a trailer. It was narrated and like everything
but it wasn't
about
really
it.
It was just like it was a world of men. It was a world of
narration.
It was like
the sword was lost. But the ring, I messed that up.
Oh, come on, man. You're out. Get out of here.
The sword was lost, but the ring was found.
Yeah.
Get out of here,
so
wizard.
Basically, it spends like, I don't know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes explaining how, I mean, no one cares.
No,
like, everything was
matter.
Chaotic. Yeah. And then King Tyler came.
Yeah, King Tyler, the epic King Tyler.
Yeah, the best king name.
Apparently, it's King Tyler with an O, like Tyler.
Oh, sure.
But they just say King Tyler.
Yeah, King Tyler. Ben. King Ben was taken.
Like, you know.
Yeah. King Jim.
Less
King Jim Bob.
Be more regal.
Yeah.
Less impressive than King Jeremy.
Yeah.
Well, he's spoken, so.
Yeah, so
he was spoken for.
A simple peasant, the brave Tyler, organized the people. And destroyed the evil wizards. The sword was lost, but the ring was saved. And for a time, King Tyler ruled in peace.
So it doesn't really matter, like, any of this background story?
No, it doesn't. They could have easily just busted right into
King
it.
King Tyler is gone in, like, a second. But you know what we should do? We should probably just lay out the entire plot before we talk about this movie.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to set up typical Forgotten Failure style
for
with
the
a 20th anniversary Mike D. Break D.
20th anniversary.
Okay.
20th episode anniversary of Mike D. Break D.
Well, this week's Break D will be slightly different because, actually, our silent partner, Kristen, took a bunch of notes during the movie. So I will read her notes and summarize the movie that way.
Are we doing minute 30?
I think that should be enough.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
Boom shakalaka.
Okay. Simon the Kid. Wizard, knowledge pool, both fortune teller thing. Treason bitch on bed. Why did she treason? Gofax, the faceless fuzzy thing? Kid gets ring, immediately drops it. Bad guy keeps children hostage to ensure rain. Huge hero guy shows up and wants wine. Everyone has ridiculous helmets. Kid learns about his sword growing, then meets sex ladies in the woods. Give him Jesus juice and black magic. Sacrifices? Kid summons gargoyle. Lady is killed and turns into a flying head and shoots lasers. Oh wait, it was all a dream. Lady turns into an insect and kid kills it. Axe hole? Simon is a necromancer. Ran into David the Gnome. David the Gnome takes care of giant fluffy poodle thing. Dungeon level. Singing makes ghosts go away. Core is captured. Escapes Benny Hill style. Build a raft. Save a girl. Wait, she's a mermaid. Rainbow Bridge. They bully the dwarf to give them back the ring. Giant helmets. Bird helmets. Wing helmets. Pointy battle helmets. Storm the castle with street urchins. Wizard battle. Wait, the battle is over?
All right.
That's right.
How long did that take?
About a minute, a little more. I'm gonna say something a little crazy here.
Yeah.
Partner Kristen.
I kind of really like that.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
Yeah. And I kind of think from now on, maybe we just all, one of us every week will read our notes and that will be the future plot summary.
Because we talk
about the plot anyways when we do our talk.
Yeah. This is true. I think, you know, this is episode 20. We're changing things up.
This is a jubilee day, guys. We are going to shake some things up, forgive some taxes, and just
make some pardons.
Make it crazy.
Pardons and turkeys.
We're going to shake it up before we break it up.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Yep. We happen onto the kingdom of Axhole.
They say the Axhole repeatedly, and it always sounds like Axhole. I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
Axhold, but it's not. It's Axhole.
It's Axhole. And they talk about their Axhole a lot.
It's a smelly Axhole.
Yeah. It's a dirty Axhole.
Yeah, dirty, smelly Axhole.
Well, usually it's
around
the
corners.
No one watches that Axhole for
sure. It's a really crowded place. Axhole is very, very crowded.
Lots of people.
Axhole is bursting at the seams.
In and out. Well, it's generally the queen who keeps saying Axhole.
Yeah.
Because the evil guy, Shirgar, or whatever his name is, conquers the kingdom with his magic.
Jafar.
Yeah, Shirkar.
And he's like, "You are my queen. Don't forget that. I rule you." And she says, "Nobody rules Axhole."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess she wants her ex-husband to rule Axhole, but he's been killed.
So this movie contains
King Tyler.
A lot of fantastical things. And I will say that it's awesome that they tried to have a lot of different species and a lot of different like fantastical beings.
Yes.
They
so it contains a lot of weird, wacky costumes that were left over from Deathstalker and some other similar movies.
It was not successful.
Yeah, it's like a poor man's like labyrinth or something.
Pretty
much.
Yeah.
The thing about this is it's like a video game where every level you encounter some weird creature that has no relation to the previous creature or any of the other creatures.
And no one seems to know about that other creature.
There's
too.
No explanation it's of who they are and where they came from. And then you defeat all of them the same way, just by pushing the same button over and over. Like, there's no suspense in any of these battle scenes because we don't even know what the creatures are or what they're trying to do. They just get in the way.
Because it's not a good movie.
And they're playing with Game Genie.
Well, it's a kid's movie. This is basically Deathstalker for kids. Like, it was made in Argentina, like Deathstalker was, and a few others, like The Warrior and The Sorceress. And it was made in the mid-80s, and it's got a bunch of Argentinian extras and a bunch of English-speaking actors. Except this one only has one nipple.
Yeah.
This being a kid movie. Yeah.
Three of us had no idea what you're talking about.
You've never seen Deathstalker?
No, I don't know that comparison.
Deathstalker and the Warriors from Hell?
No.
Yeah, nope.
No, never seen it.
Okay, well,
go on with your reference.
The whole time you were talking, the three of us were just like,
The bad guy in this movie is incredibly similar to the bad guy from Deathstalker.
I don't think
also incredibly similar to the bad guy from Aladdin, because it's just Jafar. Human face.
It's not going to make any more sense.
Yeah, it's your traditional Jafar dynamic, because the guy who is scheming to take over from King Tyler is his vizier. They never say that word, but he's Jafar,
that's what he
basically.
Is.
Yeah.
He's even a vizier?
Well, it's like a thing from Arabian kingdoms. Like, he's the guy who advises the sultan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, it's funny. They, like, throw little bits of, like, plot in there just in conversations. Like, it's right after he takes over the kingdom from King Tyler. He's like, yes, how did you think a lowly advisor would come to this to basically take you as his queen? Because that's what you do. You depose a king, and then his wife becomes your queen, I guess, willingly.
That's how stuff works.
Well, in these kingdoms, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
If you can tame her. If you can resist her saying guards with you also saying guards, we can find out who actually controls the guards.
Being a guard must be so difficult. You don't know whose order to follow. I mean, if you fuck it up, you're dead.
And if you don't fuck it up, you get
you're still
evaporated into a color.
Yeah. Yes. And if you die, then you become undead, and then you become very lonely.
You become very lonely, and you rise from the grave.
Yeah.
You and your Crypt Keeper friends will shamble through this mist.
A scene reminiscent of The Lord of the Rings 3. The young kid who has magic powers, even though he lost the magic ring 1 minute after getting it.
He is the son of a wizard.
Yeah, he's son of a wizard.
Son of a wizard.
You son of a wizard.
His dad, the wizard, looks like Jesus in the amazing purple dream coat.
There's a lot of Jesus-looking dudes in this movie.
A lot.
And they were usually pretty cool.
And one of them was the best character in the whole movie.
Ever.
Oh, we'll get to him.
Yeah, that was
amazing.
In another vision that he saw in the mystical crystal
bird
bath.
I thought that was real life.
Well, no, it was real life, but he was seeing it from afar, crystal ball type thing.
No, it was when he, in that siren bug lady had him all drugged up. She roofied him up. up and then he had that vision.
No, I thought the scene with the peasants was when he was in the dwarf's house.
Nope.
Yeah, no, that was in the dwarf's house.
Yeah, because the dwarf was like, look at what's happening to the kingdom. These peasant villages are being destroyed. And they show this peasant village and this amazing villager.
The altar stabby scene.
Yeah, the stabby with the weird bat lion guy.
Yeah. I'm inclined to think that both of those visions were just scenes taken from other movies and spliced into this one. Yeah.
Well, the kid was in that one. He was standing there watching the lion guy.
Well, he was watching that scene at the Aztec temple, but he wasn't anywhere near the Aztec temple. It was just something he saw because they conjured it up for him.
So they had spandex in the Middle Ages. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I don't know how you make it, but it's there and it's in abundance.
Yeah, like, I always thought the like men in tights thing was a joke, but apparently it was a big deal.
No, you can get it everywhere.
Yeah, they also had like just a lot of plain cotton shirts.
Yeah,
a lot of like undershirts and stuff were plain. And different colors.
And fabric that looked like chainmail, but it wasn't.
No. It was like more like a... there was also a lot of people who had like scale mail for fashion, and it was just like a beret.
Scale mail.
They had like beret, chainmail, or scale mail.
Yeah, they had chainmail hats, but they did not cover any part of the head except the very top of the skull. They must have been really heavy and useless.
Yeah, for like Jafar's...
It was like a Jewish hat.
a yarmulke.
It's called a Jewish hat.
Yeah,
that's what they call it.
Like the first battle scene where you see like this very ineffectual like armor and helmet system. Mm-hmm. It's Jafar's forces. I guess they're taking the castle. And like this fight scene is kind of strange. I mean, I guess it's a kid's movie, but like the cavalry rides in. They don't ride anyone down. They just kind of like ride past people.
Oh,
like,
they don't ride that fast. So the people are just able to get out of the way.
Yeah, but
they would have
ridden
them down if they hadn't gotten out of the way.
Yeah, but I mean, they're doing it slow enough that they like don't really want to hurt anybody. Like, all right, we're taking the castle, but let's try to do this without getting any blood on anything.
We can't risk any liability suits, guys. So we're gonna do this very slowly, and you just kind of get out of the way.
Yeah, that was basically what I got from it. They don't want any breaks in the action, so they just said, hey, don't get hurt, so we don't have to cut.
And I mean, if you got close enough to the horse, you just kind of touched it. You just touched the horse and the rider.
You just pet it as it rode by.
It was the weirdest fight scene ever. Like guys holding swords in the air and people petting horses. Yeah. That's basically what it came down to.
It really was.
Yeah, it's like in the aquarium when you pet the stingrays as they swim by.
Yeah, that was a very good, analogy.
Yeah, it really reminded me of that fish place.
Yes,
the fish place. The fish.
Shout out to that fish place.
No, it's called that fish place.
/ that pet place.
Our new sponsor. Yeah. The greatest fish store in the county.
Yeah, you can buy flea slacks there too, which are also in this movie.
Fish kim.
Yeah.
To the fantastical creatures. There were a lot of them.
In fact, there's a main one too.
Yeah, the main pet, Golfax.
Yeah, his name was Golfax.
Or Golfax. Golf bag, depending on how well the audio renders.
He was the pet of the young wizard boy
Simon.
Hero.
And the only person with a normal name in the movie, except King Tyler.
He looked like Muzzy from those old...
Yeah, he looked just like Muzzy.
From those old, learn French and, like, learn different languages. I'm not sure if you used to see those commercials.
Oh, yeah.
He used to play all the time on, like, Nickelodeon. Yeah.
During Inspector Gadget, see, like, every commercial break, Je suis le grand musée.
Yeah. So imagine Muzzy, but, like, if Muzzy and, like, a sheep got together and then their kids had kids.
With an alpaca?
Yeah, with an alpaca, but then they just kept inbreeding with each other.
This is what happens.
While.
He just like looks like Muzzy, but without a face. Like, you can't see his eyes. And you can't see his mouth unless he opens it.
I don't think he was born with a tongue. Because
kind of looks like that shifty-eyed ape over there a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those of you watching the live stream, just pan over to the ape in the corner of the room.
Yes.
Yeah, he's an Arctic ape. He's white, just like Golfax. Who I thought they were introducing him as Colfax, which I suppose would be the reincarnation of ex-U.S. Vice President Schuyler Colfax.
Yeah,
like Sandy Koufax.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
The audio on this was awful. Like, it was very muffled, so it was hard to hear a lot of things. So it was really easy to not understand what they were saying when they were saying different names.
Well, I don't think Colfax was actually talking.
No. A lot of the creatures had their own language.
No, I'm saying that when they were saying his name, we spent almost the entire movie trying to figure out what his name was.
Yeah, I thought it was Golfax.
Yeah, me too. I
seriously wrote down Golf Bag as his name. I thought that it actually was Golf Bag.
He does. He just kind of play a Bagger Vance type role.
Yeah,
he does.
In that he doesn't accomplish anything, but he helps the hero accomplish everything.
I thought he was more. If you guys have seen Veep, he was more of the bag boy. He's like, because he had all the information on different people. Because he would like tell Simon, like, oh no, that's Cor. Like, not that we understood it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, no, you should talk to him because Simon was, when he and Cor first met, when Simon and Cor first met, Simon was saved by Cor, and then he was just about to, like, let him go and go off on his own.
Yeah.
And not accomplish anything. And then Golfax was like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, kid.
Is there any way we can repay you, sir?
Yeah, have you got any wine?
No.
Well, I guess not then. See ya.
Stringy, come on, Stringy, Simon, do a quarterback.
Who's the conqueror? Are you sure?
Even Jamie knew.
Hey. Are you really Cor the Conqueror?
Yeah, why?
Talk about this Cor cat.
Yeah.
But, you know, not me.
Yeah,
someone Cor, else talk about this
I
Cor
thought
cat.
Cor had, like, nine R's on the end of it, because they said it kind of like Cor.
Cor!
But in the credits, there's only one R.
So he plays the disappointing. He plays the Yor character. That is the mercenary, bad guy, tough guy guy. Not bad guy, tough guy guy.
He's like Hercules, like Kevin Sorbo and Hercules or something like
He's
that.
He's a wanderer.
He doesn't take things too seriously.
Vagabond Knight.
He has fun with it.
He's basically a death stalker.
He also likes to drink wine and stuff.
He's big into wine.
Mm-hmm. He's a tall dude. He's a fighter.
Yes.
He has a sword.
He's got barbarian a big sword. Class.
He has a long sword.
A big sword that is very flashy. Some brass and then like
really,
some black.
Yeah, they put a ton of effort into the helmets and the outfits of the warriors, but nothing into the weapons.
Yeah, looked like it was like a cardboard cutout that was spray painted.
Yeah, it looked incredibly shittily put together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it might actually have been, you know, cardboard because, I mean, when they hit stuff, swords are not really used to like slash. They're used to kind of like push people.
Yeah.
And people just kind of go along with whatever direction the sword is kind of nudging them in.
And also when two swords hit each other, they sound like wood blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know those wood blocks you used to play with in like
In music class?
Music class. It sounds exactly like them.
So one thing I do want to talk about with this initial sort of scene with Cor and Simon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Simon has a fight scene. He has a sword. He has a tiny sword. And
it's like a dagger.
Yeah. And some like dude who just looks like a LARPing nerd in the forest shows up out of nowhere.
Like all the other characters in this movie don't look like LARPing nerds.
No, this one especially.
Yeah, this one's especially
LARPing. He looks like a fucking dweeb.
Plus, he's like a humanoid.
Is the guy who looked like the nerd bot from Mutant Hunt.
Not to disparage.
He was like a 90-pound weakling.
LARPers, but this guy like just looked like he
LARPing
just got done
wrong.
Playing D&D and like went out into the woods to do some LARPing on a Sunday.
You see him raise his arms, just strike him down with his swift sword, and they are so scrawny.
Yeah, and so he's super slow with his long sword, and it gives Simon enough time to run away because I mean if you take forever to swing your sword people are just gonna run away from it
this is not a turn-based strategy movie, you know, people are not gonna wait around for that.
So Simon at one point, he's really good at dropping things and just like losing shit that's necessary
because
he does that like with the ring in the very beginning. His dad's like, here's this ring, be very careful, and he immediately drops it and then disappears
before
it's
I
like,
get god my son
son, the one thing I must do before I get killed by Jafar is give you this ring, don't drop it.
So what he does when he's in this fight with this LARP nerd, he trips, I think, at some point when he's running away, and he just throws, like tomahawks that sword away from him and into a tree, and he's like laying there, and the LARP dude's gonna just fuck him up, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's like hears his dad's voice, and he's like, "Daddy, you know what's going on?" And then his sword. Grows. His sword, just
sword grew three sizes that day.
Every time he gets excited, the sword grows.
You didn't have to sound familiar. Cats.
Yeah, and it only took almost being killed for him to get. It was. He looked very confused about it. He's like, "Why was I this close to death? And then my sword got this big."
He was very excited.
It.
And so then as soon as he killed the guy, the sword shrinks right back down.
After his final blow.
Like, I'm going to have to wait like 30 minutes before I can kill another guy with this thing.
Yeah, he like holds the sword too. It's in a very, you know, that RPG thing comes up again. He like takes the sword, like the guy gives him enough time to get the sword out of the tree, hold it in his hands, caress it, look at its girth and its length, and to appreciate the power of this long sword when it was such a small sword before. And then he gets back into the fight because the turn's over. And it's like, and then, you know.
And then, not to just like go scene by scene, but this is amazing because immediately after, this woman appears.
His
sexy woman appears.
The sexy looking woman with the voice of Cobra Commander.
Yeah, she's like,
I saw you, brave knight.
Yeah, she's so impressed by like what she just saw. She's like, oh my god, that was like super hot. And she doesn't say like
that. That was the line.
No, she says like,
oh my god, you're super hot.
And she's saying this in a very serious like, But anyway, basically the gist of it is she's like, why don't you come with me? Because I can do whatever you like.
I'll fill all your desires.
Yeah, all your desires. Yeah. I'll do it. And this boy's like 12.
Yeah. Like, I don't even think like his sword was growing, but I don't think his
sword.
Dong
he just
was
found out that his sword could
yet.
Grow and then shrink back.
Yeah.
And that he could hit things with a sword.
Yeah,
it's a big
just
day
found
for
out.
him.
And now he's about to go run wild in a harem.
Yeah, this woman who's like very obviously a siren pops up, and she's like trying to convince him to come with her, and she'll fulfill all of his fantasies and shit. She's like obviously 30.
Yes. She's at, I think 40.
Yeah, 40. I'm being kind.
Well, her voice was over 40-ish.
Well, she was an 80s 30. So
yeah, she's an 80s 30. 80s 30 is a modern 45.
It is. It's true.
Well, just because she had that hair that nobody under 50 has nowadays, so it's hard to imagine her so young.
So she does lead him back, and there's like other little boys that are in the area that have been. I guess they just like little boys only.
Yeah,
and
there's also the little fun guy playing the flute.
Yeah, there's a little pan flute flute dude,
kind of a Torgo type.
And there's a point where the music is not pan flutey at all.
There's no
pan flute in the music, like the soundtrack. She's talking to the boy and like convincing him to drink whatever like Rohypnol she has on her.
It's called Jesus juice.
And it cuts to the pan guy who's outside of this tent, mm-hmm. and he's like sensually playing the pan flute, and mm-hmm. you don't hear anything.
Yeah, it's like a close up, like he was gonna do a solo, but there's nothing. It's still just like guitar. Yeah.
And then they close up on the pan flute guy, and he's just making eyes at the camera, like, you know how I play this?
So good. I play this so well.
And there's
well.
No way to make pan flute sexy. No. There's zero way to make pan
flute
sexy.
I think a lot of Argentinians would disagree with you there. Because I'm sure, you know, they cast around for Argentinians to be the extras in this movie. And they wanted Argentinians to bring in their musical instruments. And this was the only guy who did. And they just had to deal with it.
The only guy that came in was a white dude from California.
Yeah.
Argentinians are white dudes.
Not all of them.
Yeah.
Well, not all of them, but anyway.
Yeah, just the German expats. Yeah. I mean, the super patriots.
Just tracks.
The ultra patriots.
Yeah, the uber patriots,
some would say. There's a lot of, that's not the only like weird kid creepiness that goes on, like adult kid creepiness.
Of course, because that scene where they're showing you like the close-ups of these people, it's like, hey, are you interested in this?
Yeah.
This pan flute guy? What are you interested in?
You can do anything here. What do you want?
Yeah.
You got a blank check at the harem.
But back at the castle, Simon was actually somewhat betrothed to the princess.
The princess really liked him.
She was way more into him.
Yeah, she was smitten.
He was into her.
Yeah, the first scene in the movie is her saying, "You'll marry me, right?" You
know? Yeah, and he's kind of like trying to like play it cool, and he's like, "We're kind of too young for this."
Yeah,
you're a girl. Gross,
like, chill,
also.
Bro.
Yeah, come on. I got to get in some other shit first. before I come make any commitments.
I got to figure out how my sword works.
So he's got to figure out how a sword works. That's why. He wasn't ready. But back at the castle, this young girl, I forget her name, Aura or something like that.
Yeah, Aura.
She the wizard who's taken over as king, he's replaced
Jafar.
He quickly gets tired of the queen.
He literally said, "I tire of you."
It seems like the queen helped him take over too.
Yes.
Like,
oh, she was,
she was really
it.
Done.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She was really done with
She was very integral to the Jafar guy's takeover.
Yeah. And so Jafar gets really tired of it, and he has a scene with Aura, the like 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Where he's in her room and he's like telling her, "Getting really tired of the queen. What do you think? I make you my queen."
Yeah.
And she's very obviously not having it.
Not
she
interested.
Tells him that she hates him.
The creepy stepdad routine. It's just, you know, like, your mom's getting boring. I think I'm about putting her aside.
Yeah. Especially for the princess. Like, among other things, she's going to be the queen anyway when her parents die.
And even, like, touches her, like, upper chest area.
Like,
a little
lower
bit.
Shoulder.
Yeah.
Extremely.
It's very gross.
But it could have been more gross, because this is the one scene where Shurka, whatever his name is not wearing his crazy golden helmet.
Yeah.
Because so when he takes that thing off, he looks about in his late 20s. When he puts on his stupid helmet, he looks at mid-40s.
He looks like a creepy Jersey stepdad who probably owns a chain of
pizza
restaurants.
At least without his helmet, he looks like the stepdad is younger than the mom.
Okay, that's a good point.
Stepdad, though he might be.
So there's also that weird scene when Simon is with the sirens, and he is kind of he drinks the wine. He drinks the R. Kelly Kool-Aid and passes the fuck out.
Drinks the Cosby mix.
The Cosby mix, and he and so he has this, the siren is telling him all these things about like dark magic, use dark magic, and I don't know. And he pops into this like night scene where there's an altar and there's some sort of ritual going on. And
it's like a human sacrifice type
of
thing.
Like, she's telling him, like, join the forces of black magic. You can do all this great stuff.
It's so cool.
But then all they show is like a evil priest sacrificing some girl on an Aztec altar. I don't know why she would show him that to try to get him interested in the black magic, unless she thought he was already evil.
Yeah, and he bucks against it, basically. Yeah.
So does he introduce those things into his dream?
He introduces one. He calls goodness and light and stuff.
Yeah.
And then,
which turns out to be a lion bat.
Kind of crazy manticore
dragon.
Yeah, it's like a
creepy
griffin.
Arms.
It's like a griffin, but with bat arms and bat wings.
Yeah, and just not a lot of facial expression.
Yeah. I want to point out that on the cover of the VHS box, he is riding this creature.
Never happened.
Yeah, in the movie, the creature is about 2 feet wide.
Yeah,
and most of that is his wings, and obviously he doesn't ride anything.
Well, he's up in the night sky, so he's supposed to be we're supposed to think he's a lot larger. And then all of a sudden, this woman's face also appears in the sky. That's about
David
the same
Bowie.
Size. Yeah,
from The Hunger.
Yeah,
and it's got like a half face. Yeah. So like half of it's like this weird alien.
She's like two-faced, kind of.
Yeah.
And they both have like magic shooting out of their whatevers, and it's
out of
and
their butts.
And it's kind of like it's almost like a Terry Gilliam type. Like it has
that quality of animation.
But no, it's not even that. It's like a horrible quality Terry Gilliam ripoff.
I mean the animation from Monty Python, where it was just like cut out pieces of paper moving around.
This would be kind of interesting if you were a kid, and it is a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. But this is 1984 when this movie was actually made, and 1985 when it came out. That would have been great for 1965.
Yes.
Yeah. It very much looked like an old Star Trek.
It would have been the best episode of Captain Video ever.
All of the magics that happen
the
in
magics.
This. It's just that sort of 60s effect where it's color on the screen that moves.
Just color shapes.
Yeah, just color shapes
and laser
that form.
Looking things.
Yeah, it's
generally colored
really
circles over the pupils of somebody's eyes.
Yeah.
They do that again and again and again and again.
And then practical effects when it actually hits something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those was pretty cool, though, when one of them was shooting laser beams at, I think, his dad, the wizard guy. And the wizard was deflecting it with what looked like a light umbrella.
It was like a shield.
It was like a force field, but it wasn't an entire force field that went all the way around him. It was just shaped like an umbrella.
Yeah, like a shield.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that at that same battle of the floating head
creatures.
slash awful monster fight in the air
sacrifice. Oh shit!
Yeah, there's the woman who's about to be sacrificed. Yeah. The sacrifice is interrupted because these two
all hell just
deities are fighting in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy getting ready to do the sacrifice, he is not taking no for an answer. He just grabs the closest woman to him and stabs her.
Yeah.
I guess he really wanted to stab somebody,
and then pushes her into the fire with
a pelvic thrust.
Yeah, pelvic thrust her into the fire after he stabbed her.
Yeah. He stabs her and it is a great scene.
It was amazing.
I
unsheathed my dagger. I got to do something.
And it was like the chick that was dressed just like him. So I think that was like his somewhere
that,
close to him.
That was his
lady.
Yeah,
that was another
lady.
Cultist.
And she looked really surprised. She's like, what?
She's like, how you stab me, man?
What the fuck?
At two Brutus?
Yeah.
You're supposed to stab me next year.
Yeah. I've never seen death by pelvic thrust right to a fire.
I know.
Yeah. I've never seen that. I don't think I'll ever see it again.
Okay.
It was special.
I hope. I mean, there is a sequel to this movie. I can only hope.
Yeah.
So after this vision, then the siren ladies are telling him more stuff about black magic. And then the siren lady turns into a giant insect. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And Kor returns.
Yeah. Kor
not
returns.
Not to kill the insect monster, but to throw the kid the sword. Because, again, this is the strange dynamic they have.
Yeah.
He has to be the mentor. He can't fight all of his sword battles for him.
He's
the very times you
need
to stab into the soft underbelly of this weird woman insect creature and watch its guts spill all over you in a gushing...
Gross.
Yeah.
Well, when you have the option of either stabbing somebody with a sword or throwing your sword to somebody else who doesn't even know you're there so he can stab them with a sword. You have to throw your sword
to
the other
guy.
Doing
drugs all day.
Yeah.
The thing is, he's not going to coddle the boy. The boy's just lost his father. No one's going to raise him.
Exactly.
The boy's too old to be raised by another man.
Yeah.
And so Kor's just trying to teach him.
He's like a buddy.
He's trying to show him sword stuff.
He's empowering
sword
him.
Stuff.
Yeah.
It's a very Rousedower dynamic.
Yeah, he's teaching him how to use
the kid
a sword.
Needs a father figure.
Yeah, he's...
And he encounters one in this roustabout slash vagabond.
The kid has just learned about a sword, and he's just teaching... saying, hey, you got to deal with your sword yourself.
Yeah, you just run with it, kid.
Your dad's not here. He's not going to teach you how to use your sword.
Figure out your sword on your own time.
I'm not your dad.
Yeah.
But I will show you how to use your sword.
So they're
he does the another necromancing.
Another creature that pops up. And this is actually they introduced two creatures. One is familiar. One is weird as fuck. But basically...
Yeah, Golfax is his familiar.
No. So they're basically these slea stacks in the forest, and they're fighting with David the gnome outside of David the gnome's house.
Yeah. Simon and Cor happen upon this.
Yeah, they're just walking through. They're trying to get to wherever they're trying to get to.
Yeah, they're gallivanting in the forest.
Yeah.
And yeah, this gnome is having so much trouble because and they're not really fighting. They're just kind of like jumping around at each other.
They're like bullying him, like give us your milk money type of stuff.
I think they might have wanted his wine or something.
Yeah, maybe.
But you don't learn. You have to guess because there's no dialogue there.
Yeah, and this is the first we've seen any of these characters. Yeah. So
they're brand new.
Yeah.
And
just like every character in the movie, they are in one scene.
Yeah. And so Cor and Simon and Gullfax pop up, and they help save the day. And actually, what's funny is the Sleestaks just run away.
Yeah, they get like kind of scared away. Yeah. That's it. Like they don't fight or anything. Cor kind of takes out his sword, and I think he waves it around a little bit, and then they just run away,
gurgling, hissing noises, and they just kind of scurry off.
Yeah, I mean, every fight in this movie is like the easy level of a video game, but this is like the training level where you just hit the guys just to see what it's like to hit somebody. And they just run away because they might have to train you later.
Yeah, you never know.
And then they find out that the gnome has some sweet ass wine on his property. They hang out for a bit.
It's in like a well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny. It actually he has a ladle for this, and the ladle is
a huge
plastic
ladle. Yeah.
It's a huge plastic ladle. Yeah.
No, it's a man sized ladle.
I think Cor was just carrying that around with him.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think that ladle was there with the.
He understands the complicated
it's
process
Cor's
of turning.
Personal ladle.
Yeah.
Well, he talks about how much of a booze hound he is frequently. He's
yeah, like, but why would you?
Kid, do you have any wine?
Why would that mean he has a ladle on him?
Yeah, ladle's but, like for soup.
But so anyway, they go inside, and after he like drinks out of this gigantic ladle that's like his size. They go inside, and the gnome is very generously giving him wine in these tiny, tiny little gnome wine cups.
It's like smaller than a shot glass.
Yeah.
They're a cordial glass.
Yeah, basically. Really. So he just keeps getting refills. Yeah. And eventually, the joke is that he just starts drinking out of like the
jug.
The jug.
Yeah. Which is like actually man-sized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even then, that is a small.
And we forgot to mention the gnome who was getting bullied could have easily just stepped behind his force field.
Yeah.
And not have been bullied anymore.
Yeah, his whole house has an invisible force field.
I think that was supposed to be a joke where Cor like frightens away the Sleestaks, and then he finds out later that he could have just hidden behind the force field.
I don't know if it was a joke, but it was definitely weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in this movie that seem like they could have been jokes.
Yeah, not quite.
It was like a joke, but they were like half-assed done. Like what? it was like after the fact, like, oh yeah, that was a joke.
You know
like,
what was?
A, like, you found a joke book, but all like the punchlines were written out.
Yeah.
What was kind of a funny jokey scene was a scene where Cor gets snatched up. They go through this cave. Cor comes out, and he gets snatched up by this dude who looks like one of the Knights of Ni, Knights of Saint Ni.
But with a gigantic helmet.
Yeah. With a huge helmet.
Yeah, with the longhorn steer horns on his helmet.
Yeah. And
helmet
the,
von...
What?
Helmet von Ragnar?
Yeah.
Helmet von Ragnar.
Cor gets tied up, and this is outside, and there's... I don't know who brought it or how, but there's a gigantic...
cauldron,
that's it. And they're starting a fire, and so Cor's there, and the boy comes because he was not captured.
Yeah, he stayed behind in the cave.
Like, what's up, Cor? Who are these dudes?
Yeah, he sneaks up, and he kind of explains, like, I was supposed to marry that dude's sister. And he's like, well, why didn't you, like, marry her?
Why didn't you just do it?
Yeah, and he's like, well, they're twins. And the guy takes off his helmet, and
he's like a Cyclops bulldog.
He has one eye. He has fangs
but
going
like eight
up from
as
his
well.
Bottom jaw.
Yeah.
He's not handsome.
Yeah, and he sounds like a deep-voiced Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah.
I thought he sounded like Ralph the Muppet.
Yeah. I thought he sounded like Lur.
From Omicron Percy I-8.
Yep, that's the one.
Good Friar is very eager to perform the ceremony.
Pretty much gives him the choice, you know, either you give my sister your human horn or I eat your human horn.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah, so,
either way,
basically we're like
human horn.
We're doing like Abbott and Costello in the jungle here. You know, the cannibals are going to eat this guy unless he marries the one of them.
Yeah, and then obviously the heroes end up breaking free.
Obviously.
They have a fight, and these guys are the worst, like the weird
the
silverback
guy.
Klingon
dude. Yeah, I don't
dude.
Know what they are.
He was a weirdo, but anyway, his minions were not the same race at all.
No, yeah, they were humanoids.
No, they get into a fight,
level.
And they are the worst fighters in the whole world. Yeah,
this is like negative easy level fighting.
Yes.
Like, everyone in this movie is a pretty terrible fighter, but these guys are like the lowest on that rung.
So why is it that these guys are the only fighters listed in the credits?
I don't know.
There are like a million people in these fight scenes, and these guys are listed as Rongar's warrior.
Maybe they had a line, or you could see their face, maybe.
And maybe they just, because they were featured for so long, it might be one of those
things.
Yeah.
Or maybe they actually played the other guys as well.
Yeah. that's possible too.
Yeah.
And then at the
apparently the same guy played Simon's dad and Gullfax.
Double duty. Nice.
Yeah.
Got to get to play the two worst characters at the same time.
But his voice was dubbed by some sort of starfish.
Oh.
Glorp, 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 glorp. Anyway. Yeah,
this fight is just abysmal.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah. At one point,
Core's sword gets stuck to the... Or some guy tries to pick up Core's sword and attack him with it, but I think it's too heavy or too big. So he ends up just kind of like spinning around.
Yeah, he can't control it.
And it ends up like stabbing a tree, and Core goes like, you can't handle that
sword. I remember
sword.
What this reminded me of. I just remembered it. It's Biker Mice from Mars. Remember when they were in the pits, and Immortan Joe is like, my men are having trouble handling your motorcycles, because apparently the Biker Mice can control their motorcycles with their minds from afar.
Yeah, it was kind of like that.
Usually these hilarious scenes of the motorcycle just like running around chasing these guys.
In this one, it's just replaced by a scrawny armed man trying to swing a sword around, and it's just
holding it out in front of him as if he's being pulled by it. And then somebody else bonks his head into a tree when Shurkar pulls a matador and steps aside so he avoids being stabbed.
Yeah. So Core gets his sword back and he defeats everybody. He pushes the main dude into the cauldron, and then his sister shows up in full wedding gear. Ugh. And is like, hey, let's get married. And it looks just like the other guy. And what does he say? He says something like, I'm not your typer. I don't know.
He says like, oh, I was having your brother for dinner.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's right. I heard you were having your brother for dinner. Yeah. That's such a mean thing to say to somebody whose brother you just killed.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to leave him at the altar and murder their brother in front of them.
It's the worst day of her life.
Yeah,
for sure.
Not only are you ugly and I don't want to marry you, but I'm going to eat your brother.
Yeah, family's gone.
To be fair, he doesn't eat her brother. He just cooks her brother.
Yeah.
In a cauldron.
Close enough.
Wasting food. I mean, I'm sure food is hard to get at this time.
Yeah.
So there's only one real super duper magic scene in this movie, and that is when
is that with Jesus?
Because
the Jesus scene.
What you mean
I think.
With the nunchucks?
Oh, that was magical. That was the most magical scene.
That was the
greatest scene.
A vision at the
David the Gnome's
David
house.
David the Gnome says,
"I'll take care of Golf Bag for a while you guys finish your adventure."
But they before that, he throws up some weird vision on his wall, and they go to this village where they're like, there's just this fight happening. This village is being taken over. Like broads are getting killed, like shot in the back with an arrow.
Dudes are they have these weird like bird masks.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Awesome.
That was the only time we saw the bird helmet.
The helmet has like a beak on it.
Yeah, they were cool.
Like Eyes Wide Shut style.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. But like medieval.
Like medieval plague doctor style.
Medieval Kubrick.
Yeah. So there's one dude who looks like Jesus. And
fights like him too.
A badass. And he's like the only person who like really truly fights like any of these dudes.
Believably at least. Yeah. First thing he does is he run up on a guy on a horse who has a spear, and he takes that dude's spear, and then he stabs the guy with his own spear.
Then he knocks another guy off of his horse with the spear.
Yeah.
Then he's kind of like chased over to a corner where he finds some nunchucks and just proceeds to fuck shit up.
Yeah, he goes total Michelangelo and just starts nailing
people. And
they're
like these wooden, like very crude, but very obviously nunchucks.
Yes.
And he just,
these are the best nunchucks available in Argentina at the time.
Yeah, he just goes ham on these dudes with his nunchucks.
Awesome.
And then eventually it takes like four dudes to shoot him with arrows just to stop him.
Yeah.
Because he's like an uncontrollable force.
That's the end of the vision. Like, it was literally just a showcase for this guy.
Yeah, so the vision is just like, look at what's happening to our kingdom of Axhole. Even our most badass peasants are being killed.
The vision was, check out this badass dude.
Yeah, like he dies in like, you know, typical hero fashion. Like he gets shot a couple times with the arrow. And then finally like the last guy who shoots him in the back, he lives just long enough to turn him around just like look at him and like, fuck you, man.
That was the only emotion I felt in that whole movie. Mm-hmm. I was just so sad that he wasn't there longer.
And this is a character with no lines. I don't think he's in the credits.
No, he has no lines.
Sad, he was the best part of the
whole
movie.
He was the best actor.
Yeah, he was probably spliced in from some other movie.
I want to know that guy's story. I want to watch that
movie. He's the real hero.
Yeah. Seriously. Fuck Simon.
I don't want to follow around some like bumbling 12-year-old who can't do anything right.
Well, I'm gonna need a minder to hold his sword.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at director Hector Olivera's filmography and see if there's anything called Nunchuck Warrior or something.
I doubt it.
Yeah. But,
there can be.
then there's the mermaid.
Yeah. So they travel around. Core nearly gets eaten. All this kind of bullshit. and at some point, they happen upon a waterfall.
It is an amazing waterfall.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
really
it's awesome.
Crazy awesome.
They're in the Amazon Delta at this point, I guess.
Yeah, this is like, you know, there's a lot of shit we could talk about and make fun of in this movie, but there are some really great things, like the helmets are awesome, and this, like, the scenery they get for some of these shots is really awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this waterfall looks just so cool.
There's no running out of luck, but it has some nice South American footage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, and this waterfall is apparently a tributary of Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, there's a lot of brown, muddy water going on.
Lots. It looks like, just like Augustus Gloop would be like floating down.
I think this is Gloopas on the shores.
Yeah.
I think this is Iguazu Falls.
Iguazu.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll need someone from Iguazu Falls to confirm that for us.
But the Umbalibas are from South America, right? So this is probably where they come from. Rivers of
this
chocolate.
This is probably where the fictional dwarves everywhere come from.
From the planet that they...
This kingdom
the planet
is, like,
is South America.
This kingdom is like 30% dwarves. Mm.
So at some point they reach... They come up from like high up on... like on a mountainside that's kind of by... the waterfall, right? Mm-hmm. I think that they would have like sort of a bird's eye view of like where the falls fall.
Yeah.
But they come down before like one of the like
before it ends.
Ends. There's another fall.
Like imagine a staircase. There's like one set of waterfalls and the next stair and there's another set of waterfalls.
And Kor decides to build his raft there.
Yeah. Like right in the heart of the
like not just travel down further down the mountain on foot.
Like when you're an adventurer like Kor, you don't do things the easy way.
No. Core's hardcore.
You make the hard decisions.
He named
everyone else killed.
Yeah. His first name is hard, right? Yeah.
Hardcore.
but he's interrupted. He's rudely interrupted by a naked lady in the water who's like drowning.
Which I'm pretty sure we saw a nipple.
Yeah, we can confirm that she's a naked
being
lady.
A kid
yeah, I'm pretty sure because there was no way because she was topless for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. And there was a part where you could see like boob and then like. Obviously, like an areola.
Yeah,
a
flash
like
of areola.
Yeah, it was like a little bit of dark skin going on. Or she had a mole or something.
Something.
Yeah. She had a mole where her nipple should be.
Yeah, she had a nipple mole.
You can show that.
that's perfectly fine. They just photoshopped a male nipple on there. And like,
exactly.
Ah, cool, man.
Yeah, it's
like,
fine.
She had a mastectomy, and then she had another nipple tattooed on.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's just morbid to think about. Jeez.
It was a preventive mastectomy.
I cannot continue with this podcast. Yeah.
But then he proves his bravery by going out to save her. And then nothing happens after that.
Well, he doesn't like realize that he thinks that he's chasing after her, like some actual drowning, and she disappears and he's like, "What?" And then he comes back to shore to like work on this raft again, and all of a sudden above them is a different mermaid.
I don't know if
it was
a
different hair color.
Yeah.
I think it's the same woman, except that now her hair is dry.
Yeah, maybe that's cuz light hair gets darker.
But yeah,
when
so she's the worst mermaid outfit ever because it's like very obviously cloth with legs in it.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of like perched on some rocks.
Yeah.
And she just teleported there somehow.
Yeah. She not only teleported, but her hair got dry
instantly.
And she definitely was shirtless because her hair was covering her non-top.
And what was great is she's like, I've tested you and you've proven you're self-worthy. You
tested your manhood.
Yeah, manhood.
Yeah, I tested your manhood when we were out there in the water.
Yeah.
And you've proven yourself worthy.
A lot of manhood tests.
So take this rainbow bridge to wherever you were trying to go. This is a shortcut to wherever you... It was basically like she gave him a whistle, like in Mario 3. And he was like, just blow the whistle.
You'll go
and
you can like...
Which is actually kind of makes sense because I think the next scene, they're at the castle.
Yeah, they're
like, they don't
there.
Show them going over the rainbow or anything. It's just like, here's a rainbow, castle.
The next scene, they meet back up with Golfax.
That's correct.
Yeah, Golfax just there.
They just walk
like, hey,
in
guys.
And Golfax is like, hey, what's up?
Well, not really. He's like,
he's like, oh, Day of the Gnome, and I did so many shrooms when you're gone.
Oh, my God. You know, he's got like a secret passageway under his house. Why didn't you just use that?
Yeah, this is like directly behind his house. Why did you leave? Yeah.
Didn't you hear the castle shit behind him?
Yeah.
Yeah, this would have been a good opportunity for a joke. Because like throughout the movie, Golfax is speaking gibberish, and they can all understand what he says.
Yeah.
So in this scene, they should have had him speaking gibberish, and then they go... What? What the hell are you talking about?
I almost got eaten for you.
Yeah.
Golfax, take a rest. Lie down for a while.
It would have been funny if he spoke English and they didn't know what he said.
Yeah, it's all
the
same.
It's like, we just came through the other cave and I don't understand
and
what you're saying, Golfax.
That would be believable if he just all of a sudden started speaking like just regular English.
Yeah.
Because this entire time, his accent changes no less than like four times.
Yeah, there's what? There's like a British one?
Yeah, at the beginning it's British and then American. So
then Australian? He's got Australian. A little
Australian. Kind of Australian-y. Then he does some cowboy stuff.
Yeah.
And
then kind of Sean Connery-ish, I think.
Yeah.
And then he goes into like a country twang at some point. But he just does the whole gambit of I think it's just how he feels at the time.
Yeah, he's like, he's just.
Yeah, it just kind of, you know, it goes with his mood. And I guess, like, Simon, for what it's worth, when he does spells, which he does, and all these spells seem oddly specific, you know, he casts a spell to see the castle that, like, rhymes with the guy's name who takes the castle over.
Yeah, he makes the spells up on the spot. Yeah. These are not memorized things like in Harry Potter.
Staff of One.
Yeah, well, isn't that how wizards work? They could just conjure up anything they want.
It's kind of like slam poetry. You just kind of say what you feel, and then,
But you gotta put on a different accent, because when he starts speaking his spells, he's got, like, just a strange accent that also changes. Because I guess, you know, spells only activate if you're in a different accent other than your speaking voice.
Yeah, he's a kid. He's still trying to figure
it out. Otherwise, you could accidentally do spells when you're just rhyming words. And that would be really inconvenient.
That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there is a scene where I wasn't sure if he was using his magic or, like, it's not explained at all. There's a scene where they're Cor and Simon are in a cave together.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, ghosts appear. Just tons of ghosts.
Scary, like, weird-faced ghosts, too, not, like, human ghosts.
And just, like, flying all around, flying towards the camera, flying everywhere, and they're just, like, being annoying ghosts.
Yeah, they look like those, they have the faces of those, like, Chinese gargoyle things. Yeah. Like, they're kind of doggy, but kind of dragony.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't do anything other than just be annoying and fly around. They're not, like, hitting anything.
Yeah, it's like
or
the Haunted Mansion.
Cor pulls out
a
sword because
around.
He doesn't understand how ghosts work.
And, he's going to fight off a ghost with a sword.
Yeah.
Even Simon looks like, what the fuck are you doing?
And so Cor starts...
You can spin jump on them, but you can't kill them.
For no reason, Cor starts singing and then convinces Simon to start singing along with him.
Oh, man.
And that somehow makes the ghosts go away. And then Cor's like, see, you have... You did it.
You've got the power
of love. You've got the power.
I guess the idea that was by...
the power of love.
Yeah.
I guess the idea was that by singing, they conquered their fear, because you can't sing if you're afraid.
He said something about faith. I don't know if they were singing a gospel song or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
But they never
explained,
it was
an
old
spiritual.
Why that would make a ghost go away?
Yeah, or why the ghosts were there.
Yeah, why they were there
in
the first place.
Well, dungeon level. You know, they needed some ghosts.
It was another damn test of manhood. This time it was like, if you ignore the ghosts, they'll go away. Just don't look. Just don't look.
So there's...
Oh, also, other weird, you know, monsters. Cause, I mean, we had the ghost. We also had, like, the Sleesaks. There was a giant Sleesak at the...
David the Gnome scene.
Yes. The Sleesaks come back as they're, like, you know, getting ready to leave the gnome's house. And the Sleesaks are back. They're like...
And they're up to something. Because they're all... Yeah, they're up to something. They're like, hey, buddy.
I don't speak Argonian Sleesak, whatever. anyway, they then point up, because I guess no one pointed up before.
No.
And they just, like, a 20-foot Sleesak or
variant,
Sleesloker or whatever you call it.
Yeah, he's got a giant head, although it's a normal-sized guy.
Yeah.
It's giant basically just a horse perspective shot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's because
you never
bigger.
See him and anything else in the same scene.
And he has a gigantic sword that he swings around, like, not very, like, no
very,
precision.
Yeah.
Just, he just has
just
a giant
aimlessly.
Sword.
Just like everyone else.
Yeah.
Aiming is for pussies.
And so Cor kind of gives up, and he's like, Simon.
Yeah, he doesn't
like magic.
Follow through
on
very much, really.
magic this. And so Simon,
deal with this. I'm too tired.
So Simon magics it through I guess the
through methods.
The shield doesn't protect against magic.
No,
only like physical forces. Because he magics right through the shield and just.
It just disappears.
It disappears.
It's general magic doing
magic missile to the face.
Yeah. And so.
I guess that lesson is supposed to be that, like, hey, if you have good technique. You don't even need your long sword. You just sometimes, you know, technique will take.
Yeah,
it wasn't your magic thing that did it. It was you.
Yeah, which looking back at that whole magic, like the sword growing scene, like it was kind of pointless because he doesn't use a sword ever again.
Yeah. He just uses magic.
Like, why couldn't he, like, learned, oh, I could use some magic? Like, you would think that would be the logical progression of, like, hey, in this first scene where I'm almost going to get killed, I'll use a little bit of magic.
Sure,
like,
that makes
haplessly,
sense.
Haplessly. Yeah. And, like, you know, on accident maybe. And he's like, oh, that worked. Yeah. So then, like, the next time he grows and grows with his magic. But no, he's just, like, sword. And then all of a sudden he's, like, he's proficient in magic from that point on.
Yeah, they end up getting back to the castle, obviously.
They take the Rainbow Road.
Yeah, take the Rainbow Road, get back to the castle. They get back just in time because one of the I don't know what the little people that are there, the Oompa Loompas.
The dwarves.
I think they just call them the dwarves. Okay. So
there are a lot of dwarves.
Yeah, one of the dwarves there finds the ring that they've been looking
for.
Fourth
of the actors
have missed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as he finds the ring and he's like, oh, I found the ring. I'm going to go bring it to Shere Khan or whatever his name is.
it's Rita Repulsa's brother.
Yeah. And as soon as he does that, The dwarf runs right into Gulfax's like dong area because he's just that height.
So while he's just staring at Gulfax's furry crotch,
hang down,
looking very intimidated.
His Gulf bag,
and and Simon just does like a hand motion, give it to me.
Yeah,
he cups his hand right under Gulf bag's crotch.
Yep. Gulf bag's bag. Yep. And this little dude looks kind of like one of the guys from Hall & Oates, the guy with the mustache. I forget which one it was.
Yeah, after seeing him in Mutant Hunt as the mercenary who hangs out with the stripper mercenary, here he is again as a dwarf.
Yeah, there he is.
So I don't think that like the end fight scene isn't very, there's not much that happens in it that's exciting.
Yeah, actually, like the whole forcing this dwarf to give over the ring where Gulfax just kind of like slaps him across the skull. It's actually a little bit more entertaining than the actual end fight scene.
It's like Gulfax is his dad. He's like, "What's wrong with you?
I'll give you a clout in the ear."
Yeah. So they get the ring back, and basically they release a whole bunch of prisoners.
Yeah.
And then they release the other kids.
Yeah, because Shere Khan is having this banquet in honor of him.
Where he's
going
to kill the
12-year-old princess,
and he's going to kill the queen. He announces that he's going to kill the queen, and that he's going to marry the princess.
Yeah. He's like, you didn't cooperate. I wanted to do an intergenerational type thing, and you're not down with that. So I guess I'm going to have to kill you and then have sex with your daughter. Whatever.
Yeah. And earlier in the movie, the first thing he did when he took power was say like, "We're going to hold captive all these children to ensure a good harvest."
Yeah, so that's weird.
I'm not familiar with that kind of sacrifice, but like you just put people in a dungeon. So then the children get freed, and they all like Lost Boys style, Ewok style, jump all over the guards and
hit
them with cause rocks. Chaos. There's just a bunch of chaos and nonsense,
like tripping. One uses the swords that they could have taken, but they trip people and hit them with rocks and jump on their heads.
Yeah.
And there's a guy who does like the wrestling move where he just like jumps into the crowd.
Yeah,
just like
there's a dive bomb head first. There's a head first dive bomb like right into a guy.
Into some people.
Yeah, he crowd surfs for a while.
Yeah, there's
until the bouncers tell him to stop.
And then there's the worst wizard battle ever in any movie, and that includes the one in Wizards.
Yeah, that movie was awesome compared to this.
And there's not much that happens. That it's just the Simon has a ring now, so he can do wizard stuff. Mm-hmm. There's like deflection stuff that happens, and then there's they spend a lot of time hitting things around each other.
Yeah.
It's another one of those really bad aim.
Lights going all over the place, and then explosions on the wall behind
that's
the light.
It. Just a dumb.
Some guy planted an M80 behind a brick and blew it up.
one brick.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, Simon is victorious.
Yeah.
Yeah. After Jafar does this super awesome charge up move.
Yeah, he turns into like a demon skull.
Yeah.
And then it like wraps around him.
And this red thing appears above his head. It looks like a suit of armor or something.
Yeah. And then that all just like shoots out of him altogether after that whole power
up. He gets in his full load.
Yeah.
And then he gets blue lit up and dies.
Yeah, and then Simon just bounces it off of him. And I guess that means that Jafar loses.
Well, he absorbs his full load.
Yeah.
Yeah, he absorbs the full load and it doesn't faze him.
Yeah, and
so
then
he wins.
And then, Jafar just goes into it forever now.
Took it like a man.
It doesn't Donald faze him.
Nope.
that's right. That just happened.
It took a second, but goddamn, that was good.
That was a Scrubs throwback because Core kind of looked like the janitor.
That's true. He
Scrubs.
Did.
Yes, he does.
Super looked like the janitor
really
from
does.
Scrubs. I think that we should rate this, but I think
and
that we
need to announce we have a new rating system.
We do. It's totally new.
Oh, wait. No, we have the end scene because there is
Daryl's not done.
No, Core decides to leave after, everything's all good again. And Core's like, trying to, leave Axehole.
Yeah.
And
he's done with that Axehole.
They and call Simon's him the wanderer. But please don't leave.
He's ready to wipe and leave the Axehole.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
And he's like, I need somebody around me, somebody strong. And he's like, I've already shown you. I'm already inside you. I've always been inside you.
Yeah.
Since the very beginning. You don't need me to be around you anymore. Yeah. You know proper sword techniques.
Yeah. You're strong in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got heart, kid.
Yeah.
And then the Hulk Hogan theme plays as he walks off into the sunset.
Basically. I am a real American.
And the song Victorious from the end of Tracks
rights
plays
of
for some reason.
Every man.
Doom, doom, doom. And then Ultimate Warrior comes out and starts shaking the ropes.
The ropes.
That's because I guess that's a whole overall, like, this little kid had it in him the whole time and he just didn't believe in himself.
Yeah.
And so then like he's going to go off to marry the princess and become.
Because, when your sword grows, you need to, like, you need a guide there to like guide you through that initial sword growth because it's hard. But
the Romans
knew
that.
But once you
yeah.
And but once you get it down and once your mentor has given you all he can, It's time for him to pack it up.
Exactly.
Pack
they
it in.
They know.
And
let him begin.
Pack it in. Let me begin.
Gore came to win.
battling him as a sin.
Man, I think that song was written about Gore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now he's got more rhymes than the Bible's got psalms, too.
Yeah. So, yes. So we have a new rating system because we realized that this rating system was getting a little out of hand.
A little tiresome.
Yeah.
Just hard to keep track of.
A little much. So we thought it would be better to just sort of have a little bit of a pass-fail. Like either we would want to watch it again and recommend it to other people,
mm-hmm.
Or we don't think it's worth anybody's time.
Don't waste your time.
Or we can't really say. Either we're indifferent.
Indifferent to it, and here's why.
Or we know that we really enjoyed it, but we can't really say if anybody else is going to enjoy it the same way we did.
Had some good, had some bad.
Does it deserve to be forgotten? Is it really a failure? Or is it like a failure in a good way, or is it a failure in a absolutely abysmal way?
Is it forgettable, or is it rememberable?
Yeah. Or is it...
Is it memorable?
Is it other?
Is it meh?
Despicable.
Yeah.
Is it memorable?
Okay, so we've created seven overlapping rankings here. So I have to give this movie no less than two, but no more than three of them.
Nope.
Well, you created four rankings right there.
No, those are your own personal. Okay. Would you personally recommend it? That's what goes into you making that decision.
Okay, well, I'm going to
give it 17 slee slacks.
Yeah. All you have to say is I'm lumping it in with the movies that I would recommend and did like.
You should watch this. You should not watch this. Yes. Or maybe.
There you
go. Who cares?
Yes, no, maybe.
It's way up.
Yeah. It's basically middle school girlfriend boyfriend passing. Yes, no, maybe.
Okay, well, I want this movie to be neither my girlfriend nor my boyfriend.
Yeah.
I give it zero slee stacks up. This kind of movie is incredibly easy to make, so I say don't bother watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of on that same thing. I would give it more in the middle ground just because it was kind of ridiculous and it had its parts. If you're with like a group of people and you kind of want to just have some background stuff, it might be worth it. But I'm leaning towards the don't bother with it.
Yeah, I would say like this is... I would not watch it again.
No.
I'm not even going to... I would not watch it again. The only context in which this works, I think, and is entertaining is if, like Mike said... there are other people around, you're having other conversations.
Yeah.
Because every now and then a weird thing.
Point.
Yeah. Every now and then a weird thing will pop up that's like, what?
Yeah.
But other than that.
Manticore.
Yeah.
Or if you're
necromancy.
Yeah. I've never done acid, but I assume that this movie would be pretty crazy on acid.
But yeah, I would not. It's forgettable to me.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to have to go. This is pretty forgettable. I think this is a kid's movie. I try to think about that, but I mean, if you're a kid, you can probably find a better movie.
On the other hand, as a kid, you probably can't find a movie with more visible nipples than one for 1 second,
true.
As you see in this movie.
And I mean, the whole point of this movie is kind of like a strange sex talk. So, I mean, I guess if you're like a really irresponsible parent and you just don't care where your kid gets information
just
from.
Hand over the parenting duties to Core, played by Bo Svenson.
I mean, it teaches you all the proper things. You know, you need to find a strong male to guide you through the hard times of puberty.
Yeah.
And if you're a girl, it also teaches you to resist the urges of your weird Jersey stepdad and not to let him kill your mom in order to sleep with you.
That's true, too.
You have to be taught not to let people kill your mom.
If you're a princess, I think so.
Yeah, if you want to watch a poor man's Star Wars / Neverending Story / Time Bandits / Willow / Labyrinth.
I can watch all of those in one movie. Talk about efficiency.
Yeah, you can watch all those, but like a C-roll of all of those.
Yeah, it's all cut together, just all the stuff that was left on the floor.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was like all the cut scenes from those movies.
Yeah.
It's like the scenes
remade by a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I think this is
in 1985.
This is a solid waste of time.
Yes.
I think that's what this has become.
Yeah, don't think of this as like the everything bagel. It's not good. You know, you don't put all the elements together
and
get something great. You get all the elements together. It's like if you took an everything bagel with all the other bagels
and then
in the
dumped
shop
it out
and then made them together.
It's an everything bagel without the bagel. You just eating a bunch of poppy seeds
it's
and
like
sesame
licking
seeds
the floor
and garlic crackers.
Yeah. that's basically what this movie was.
Like the factory floor of the bagel making company.
But we also have another announcement, or just some news to share, because one of our cast members is actually moving soon to join some sort of fellowship that I'm sure is not about a ring. but well, I can't be sure.
It's not one ring to rule them all or bind them. It's just, you know, it's a squared circle, really. It's yeah. it's a wrestling team that travels around to different county fairs.
Yeah.
Are you going to be training with Arn Anderson?
Yeah.
I hope so.
I'm going to be training with Bo Svensson, since I admired his work in this movie so much as the voyaging vagabond.
Are you going to go on a quest for the real Jesus?
I'm going to go on a dream quest in unknown Kadesh.
Yeah.
Kadesh, or whatever. Quest. Yeah, probably. In with Australia, and I'm going to be looking for the Donkogen. Yeah.
So, you should probably call up Trax. He could help you out. He's pretty good at finding people.
Yeah, and making snacks. Yeah.
Corbin Burnson would be worth hitting up.
Oh, yeah. No,
he's got a lot of resources.
Yeah, so I'll be enjoying those puppy swirls as I travel around with Trax. And I will be. It will be possible to continue doing the podcast, but the format will change somewhat, probably, because I will be in a different room and not watching the movie with you guys.
Yeah, yes. We haven't tested it or tried anything out, so it'll be a huge gamble.
Yeah, just like all of these movies, it'll be a huge, huge gamble. Yeah. We're not sure if it's going to work, but we're going to make it work.
I was sure Hollow Point would work.
So
the only one that thought it worked.
So once Mike D moves, there's going to be an adjustment period for sure, and bear with us while we... it might take some time. We do have some episodes.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, he's probably been moved for about a month and a half.
Yeah.
we're going to take our time and get everything right. Yeah. Knock you out with one shot for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
What a podcast. What a podcast. What a podcast. What a mighty good podcast.
Yeah.
Help! Hold it! I said, hold it! You seem awfully brave when you're just facing a mere boy and his furry whatchamacallit.